Thank you. I will spare you the long talk that I had prepared because we've heard so many wonderful, wonderful talks. And just being in the presence of the Coreys and of Nancy and Charlie and so many incredible people here has been a real treat to me. Let me get right down to the essence of some of the things I wanted to talk to you about, which was today is the 100th day of the occupation. And it is a day for us to look at what has this occupation really brought. George Bush came in front of the press and said, 100 days of occupation, it's been good. The economy is going well. The security for the people of Iraq is moving forward. And that this occupation is not only good for the people of Iraq, but it's good for the whole world. I say, what world is George Bush living in? Not our world, not the world of the Iraqis, certainly not the world of the U.S. troops who are there. And in fact, they are indeed living in their own little bubble in Iraq because the provisional authority is based, you know, all know where it's based? Saddam Hussein's presidential palace where the Republican Guard hung out. It's still the Republican Guard. It's just a different Republican Guard. They do not leave their little bubble. And let me tell you, it's not a little bubble. It's quite a nice palace, swimming pool, everything you want. But when they go out, the only time they go out, they're surrounded by soldiers. So do you think they actually go out and talk to people on the street? In fact, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who will not be the next governor of California, he was in Iraq recently. He was in Iraq to tell the troops that they are the true terminators. He did not get out of the little bubble. He did not walk around the streets of Iraq. And he came back saying that this occupation is good for the Iraqi people. I will tell you, I went with a group of women, and we didn't go around with any guards. We didn't go around with any flak jackets. We didn't go around armed. We went around in pink, as code pink, talking to everybody that we could find. And what we found, not speaking Arabic after two days of being in Iraq, I knew how to say no electricity, no water, no jobs, no security, big problem, George Bush, big thief. Because that is what everybody was saying. And something of particular concern to this group should be what has happened to the veterans in Iraq. 400,000 people who were in the army, obligatory in Iraq, so everybody has to join the army. And just like it is here, the poorest ones stay in the army because they have nowhere else to go. And we met with people who were in the army for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, fought in the Iran-Iraq war, fought in the war against Kuwait, and didn't fight in this war. And you know why they didn't fight in this war? One, they were sick and tired of Saddam Hussein taking them into wars. And two, they believed the American propaganda that if the Americans came in and Saddam Hussein was gone, that there would be a lifting of the sanctions and the life of the Iraqi people would be better. What has happened to those 400,000 people? They said when we took off our uniforms and decided not to fight, we thought the Americans would treat us like heroes. Or at least like allies. But instead, what did they do? They disbanded the entire army, no pay, no pension benefits, no disability, and the veterans of all these different wars have absolutely no place to go for health care anymore, are out on the streets demonstrating in front of the presidential palace to say, give us our disability benefits, give us our paycheck, we deserve it, and if you don't give it to us, get what? Guess what? The only thing we know how to do is to fight. That's right. So I say that we, in this movement and Veterans for Peace, has to do something to show our support, not only for the innocent Iraqi civilians who are being hurt every day by this, but to the Iraqi army that has nowhere to go. And we don't want them to take up arms. So we also have to say, What is happening to the economy in general is a disaster. Don't believe anything the Bush administration says, because you have millions of people who have been thrown out of work thanks to this invasion. 400,000 just in the army, add another 80,000 that were in the military, and they had all these government employees who have been thrown out of work. And what do you have? Texas businessmen, failed Texas businessmen, just like the one we have in the White House, who've been brought to Iraq to run the ministries of a country they never went to before, a country that they know nothing about the history, the culture, the language. They don't even want to bother to learn the language. And they're supposed to run the economy of Iraq. And that's why it is such a disaster, because the people who know how to run the economy, the electricians, the engineers, the technicians, they have all been fired from their work. And that's why in the corrupt regime of Saddam Hussein, 40 days after the Gulf War, when the electrical grid was destroyed and the telephone system was destroyed, 40 days later was up and running because the people that know how to fix it were allowed to fix it. Right now, those people are standing in the streets unemployed while it's MCI, WorldCom, Bechtel, Halliburton, our tax money, supposedly to go in there to rebuild Iraq. They're not rebuilding Iraq. They're stealing our money, and they're keeping Iraqis from rebuilding their own economy. It is a shame, and we cannot allow it to keep happening. I also want to talk a minute about this program of de-bathification, because you are a people that can understand what this means. It is supposedly to throw people out of work who have been associated with the Ba'ath Party and the corrupt regime of Saddam Hussein. And what it means in reality, that people who had to join the party to get their jobs are thrown out of their jobs. So this includes high school teachers, it includes university professors, it includes technicians at the Ministry of Information, all thrown out of their jobs for being collaborators with the regime of Saddam Hussein. Now, I met a very interesting man named Ghazwan, whose son, his high school teacher, an English teacher, was thrown out of his job because he was a member of the Ba'ath Party. Now, this very irate father went and did something that is against the orders of Paul Bremer, which is he went home and blew up a picture of, not blew up like blow up, like make it big, a picture of Saddam Hussein. And he said, we're not allowed to have pictures of Saddam Hussein, but I thought I would defy the authorities and blow up this picture of Saddam Hussein and display it prominently, because it's a picture of Saddam Hussein shaking hands with Donald Rumsfeld. And he says, if my son's English teacher in high school is going to be fired and perhaps even jailed for collaborating with Saddam Hussein, I wanted to start at the top with Donald Rumsfeld. So I will skip a lot of my speech and go to the core, which is that we have opened up an Occupation Watch Center, and I want to work very closely with Veterans for Peace in this center, because we need to be there in Baghdad. We need eyes and ears on the ground to tell us what is happening. We opened up the center, and first we thought, oh, it's going to have to be international folks like ourselves, because the Iraqis are going to be too afraid to be associated with anything like this. To our surprise, immediately the Iraqis came forward and said, this is exactly what we need to do. As a global community, we need to come together and put our eyes and ears together and announce to the world what this occupation is really about. We opened up in the center. The two co-directors of the center are two Iraqi women who every day are putting their lives on the line, going out to tell the real story of what this occupation is about. And let me just give you a few examples. First of all, you won't know it by the mainstream media, but because of this crisis of unemployment, for the last 13 days, there's been a 24-hour-a-day sit-in by a new group called the Union of the Unemployed. They are sitting in front of the presidential palace day and night, have been arrested twice for violating the curfew. We got the United Nations to help get them out of there, and our group, our center, and the people we are involved with are giving our full support to this Union of the Unemployed and their demands that it not be the Halliburtons and the Bechtels and the MCIs and the WorldComs that get the money to rebuild Iraq, but it be the Iraqi people, and that the Iraqi people control their oil money themselves. Another absolutely essential thing we are doing in the Occupation Watch, and you can look at it by joining occupationwatch.org and get on the listserv, is taking testimony every day of people who are violated by abuses of the occupying forces. And that goes from killing, shooting, raids, stealing their possessions, to detaining people without any charges, without any access to lawyers. And just like the immigrant community here has been detained by the thousands without charges, so in Iraq there are thousands of people who are now in prison with absolutely no charges. This is a violation of the UN Charter. It's a violation of the Geneva Conventions. It's a violation of basic human rights. And we must not only be speaking out against it, we must be organizing against it so that there is attention paid to these violations, and that we demand there be respect for the UN Charter, the Geneva Convention, and the basic rights of the Iraqi people. And the hidden victims of this war are the Iraqi people. We have no idea how many of them are being killed and hurt by the occupying forces, but we know that as every day goes by and the U.S. troops are more and more jittery after being shot at, they too get more and more trigger happy. And in one hospital alone, you might have heard on a report by NPR, one hospital in Baghdad alone is reporting 10 to 20 cases of people being shot by the U.S. forces every single day. This is one hospital. We do not hear about it in the U.S. press. We've got to bring those statistics out to the world community. And lastly, we talked every day while we were there to the U.S. troops. Every day. And at first we were afraid to tell them why we were there to set up this Occupation Watch Center. So we'd say, oh, we're just a humanitarian, do-good kind of organization. Well, after talking to them for a couple of days and finding out how miserable they were, telling us that they were working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, when it was 115 degrees out inside their flak jacket, it was 130 degrees, saying that they too had no air conditioning when they went home and tried to sleep at night, that they had mite-infested cots, that they didn't get any decent food to eat because they were eating MREs 3 times a day. And they said to us, maybe we knew what we were doing when we came here to get rid of Saddam Hussein. We have absolutely no idea what we're doing here now. We hate it here. The Iraqis hate us here. We want to go home. And so we said to them, we are part of a movement in the United States. And every day after the second day there, we said, we are here as part of a movement in the United States that is launching a campaign to bring you home. And they said, here's the number of my wife, here's the number of my girlfriend, here's the number of my mother. They're going to want to join this campaign. Thank you so much. We were there at the very time that George Bush said, bring him on. And we watched the reactions of the U.S. soldiers. We were there at the going away party for members of the 3rd Infantry Division who thought they were on their way home and were celebrating their departure, and found out the next day they were not only not going home, but they were there indefinitely. And we were there at memorial services for soldier after soldier. And let me tell you, I feel so proud to be part of your organization, Veterans for Peace, and to be part of our movement that always said that the best way to support the troops was not to get into this war to begin with, and the best way now to support the troops is to bring them home. And that is what the troops there want. That is what the Iraqi people want. And we have a big job ahead of us. We have a job of organizing, of building the peace movement to the level that it was before the war started, and more so now. And somebody said today that there was a new poll that says the American people are now more interested in the economy than they are in the war on terrorism. And we say, hello, how about adding one and one together and make two? That there is a direct connection between the two, that we can't keep spending $11,000 a minute $1 billion a week on keeping our troops in harm's way in a place they should have never gone, in a place that nobody wants them there, and think that we're going to have money at home to rebuild our schools, to provide health care for our citizens, to enjoy public transportation that we don't have in this country, and to start building an energy system that gets us off the treadmill of oil and our policies of being dependent on other people's oil. We have to build those connections between the spending of billions of dollars in Iraq and the money that we need here at home. And when we add these things together, we will get so many more people to be part of our movement. And lastly, I want to say that people always say to me, don't you get depressed with all of this that's happening? And especially now, when not only we are facing the international obstacles, but we who live here in California are facing this terrible possibility of having a Terminator as a governor. Doesn't this get depressing? And I say it is so energizing because we have so many things to organize about and we have so many issues to connect to each other. And it is the connecting of the anti-corporate globalization movement together with the peace movement that is our tremendous strength, because while we might feel here in this country marginalized, put on the fringe, when we look at the global community, we are in the majority and our values are in the majority. Because the majority of the world's people do not want an economic system that puts corporate greed and the love of money above the needs of people and the environment. And the majority of the world community do not want to see the United States as an arrogant bully running roughshod over the rest of the world and pointing its finger at whoever it wants around the world and saying, you can't have weapons of mass destruction, you can't have weapons of mass destruction, but we can have 10,000 nuclear weapons, we can have the largest stockpile of chemical and biological weapons, and we can put our taxpayers' money into developing new, more usable nukes. We say no. We say we are part of a global community that says it is time to end all weapons of mass destruction. So let me just close by saying this is no time for depression. This is no time for cynicism. This is a time for us to take inspiration from the Corys, to take inspiration from Military Family Speak Out, and to take inspiration from you all, because you, in Veterans for Peace, are the moral compass of our movement. You must provide the leadership for the next phase of our movement, and we must build a global movement that says no to any new attempts at preemptive strikes. We must build a global movement that says we are all one glorious human family, and we will not allow violence to be responded to with violence, hate to be responded to with hate. We will show the world that the only way to make ourselves safe in this planet is to spread love and kindness and generosity and compassion. And that's what you're doing. Thank you.